It's Christmas in October, and you must all be good little boys and girls, because you're about to hear me, Jackie, and Zane Grant talk about 2003's Bad Santa, starring Billy Bob Thornton. Get ready for Booze, Bullshit, and Buttfucking, the three Bs. JFIO presents.
What? Are you kidding? We got us a family here.
This ain't no coon, huh?
Okay, I'm not gonna sit here and debate.
I'll show you the life of a lion!
You will find a fortune. It would not be the fortune you seek.
I suppose you think you're raised hell.
When I'm raised hell, you'll know it.
Something is very wrong. I don't want Santana Abraxas. I've just been in a terrible auto accident.
What's the most you ever lost in the coin toss?
Sometimes knowledge is yours. Accept the mystery. The Coen Brothers Podcast.
Man, I felt dirty even saying the word butt fucking. That's a quote from Bad Santa.
I hate that you did it in the beginning. I'm always so paranoid about like who's listening to the podcast.
It sounds even worse than ass fucking. Something about just the something about butt fucking.
Ugh.
Look, we're talking about the movie Bad Santa. There's no way we're going to avoid swearing completely.
That's true, but I feel like there's like something about like the first like 5 or 10 minutes.
Who do you think you're going to offend with the term butt fucking?
Clients.
Everyone?
Might look me
people, people from butt fucking Egypt.
People with butts.
Yeah. All people with
people
butts.
With butts. Because the reference in the film is not to homosexuality, which
no, it's not.
One might be offended by.
Yeah, no.
To
I mean,
all
it's
my
a thing, you know?
Fellow homosexuals.
Anybody
out there.
Can be butt fucked because everybody has a butt.
That's
so specific.
That's
just
true.
As my roommate walks by, I say that.
Well, it's
good job, Josh.
Actually, I need starting to introduce this show. Welcome to Accept the Mystery, the show where we talk about every single Coen Brothers movie. It's the movies that are just Coen associated in absurd, ridiculous, excruciating levels of detail. My name is Josh. Sitting across from me, Jackie Lechtolze, my co-host. Welcome. This is the first. This is the last time we're going to record before I have to go on vacation. You have to go on vacation.
I know, it's so sad.
You guys listening out there, you're going to have uninterrupted episodes, but us, we're going to have
we're going to have separation anxiety. Probably.
I know. Are you going to text me
from Bolivia?
From Bolivia?
Probably not.
Uh-huh.
But I'll Instagram things, and you can look at them.
That's good. That's good enough. I guess the data rates are going to be pretty shitty in Bolivia.
Yeah.
You're going to have to limit it.
I got deported. To Bolivia once from Paraguay.
Deported? Why?
Because you have to have a visa to go to Paraguay.
Yeah, but you need a visa to Bolivia too.
No.
Yeah, we have this whole visa drama.
Oh, I didn't.
But maybe
have
at
to
the time
one.
They didn't.
No, because it was before Evo Morales.
Oh yeah,
and,
that would do it.
Yeah, in Paraguay you have to have a visa to go through there to Brazil. Just so you know, even if you're on a bus.
That's so crazy. No, because the current president hates America.
Oh, right.
In Bolivia, so you just...
It's hard to keep track of which heads of
it's
South American nations
right?
hate America and which ones don't.
It's pretty easy now.
So, but it's just like a
there's like
few...
Colombia doesn't.
Right.
And the rest of them...
Venezuela doesn't.
The rest of them pretty much do.
Yeah, they just want you to pay money to get in there.
With good reason, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
There's like a long history of... exploiting their resources, so
that's true. I guess we're the great Satan
puppet government.
I just like to embrace it. I like being part of the great Satan.
That's great.
There's a lot of benefits.
I'm just saying, hey, if you were the president of a South American country,
you would hate America.
You might be doing well to hate America, just to win an election.
Look, today on the show, this other voice you're hearing, he's a fellow UCB improviser. He's mm-hmm. a co-host of the Mystic Party podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's written comics and he's taught college courses and is generally a modern day Renaissance man. Zane Grant.
Hello. Welcome. I'm so happy to be here. I'm a huge fan of the Coen Brothers and this
awesome.
Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
This podcast that is...
I'm waiting for you to finish this,
yeah.
this sentence.
That is endorsed by the Coen Brothers?
That is not true.
I believe it is.
It is. This has not been endorsed by the Coen Brothers in any way, shape, or form.
Nah, I'll just say.
I feel like they'd like it if they listened to it.
I think they would.
But that doesn't count as an endorsement.
They, you know, they didn't watch Fargo, the television series. Right?
I think I did know that actually.
Yeah, I knew that too.
Yeah,
they're
we
like,
know everything about the Coen Brothers. Come on.
Yeah, yeah, ooh. It's really good. Billy Bob Thornton is in it. He's really good in it.
Yeah,
I don't
he's
know.
Really growing on me, dude.
I don't know if he's as good as he is in this movie. This is we'll get when we get to the movie. We'll get to that first. Zane, I have a I've got to ask you some questions loosely inspired by the movie we watched. So this is a segment called Inside Zane Grant.
In
the film, Bad Santa. Mm-hmm. Billy Bob Thornton plays Santa Claus, the mythical patron saint of the Christmas season. Zane, are you familiar with Santa Claus?
I am. I was raised with Santa Claus.
Were you raised like Christian or Catholic? Or?
I was raised Southern Baptist.
You were raised Ew. Southern Baptist, no kidding.
Mm-hmm. Still a strong believer. No, I'm not.
Where are you from?
I'm from Northeast Texas.
Oh my God, it's so cool. I love Texas.
That is cool. Mm-hmm. Texas has been the city, actually, of a lot of Coen Brothers movies.
Yeah, and we get a lot of Texans on the show, too, actually.
For
yeah.
some reason,
you're
that is
true. You're at least our third, if not fourth,
wow.
Texan.
It's a big state.
Yeah, between Jay and Daryl, and yeah, there might be a couple
and
others.
And Jarrett.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I feel like there might be even more than that, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty good so far. Okay, so in that case, did you grow up believing in Santa, and do you remember when you stopped believing in Santa, if ever? Oh. Maybe you still believe in him.
That's a good question. Let me field that one. I did grow up believing in Santa Claus. I feel like I believed in a lot of things I don't believe in anymore for longer than most people probably believe in them. My cousin told me that Santa wasn't real when I was 6, and he was 2 years older than me.
Ugh, mean.
And I refused to believe him for another year.
Yeah.
He even gave evidence.
like what evidence?
He said he got up and hid and saw his mom eating the cookies.
Yeah.
And putting the presents.
I don't think that evidence would hold up in court. That does not prove that Santa isn't real. It just proves that mom ate cookies.
That's true. That's true. But to my 6-year-old brain.
Ordered.
Look, Santa's Josh pretty quick. He's got to be if he's going to get to all these houses all around the world. He zips in and out when you're not looking.
Yeah, it was sad.
What is sad?
I don't know. I mean, look, we both grew up Jewish.
I'm going to stop you right there because my family, because they're Soviet, there was no Jewish tradition or anything when in Soviet Russia. So
right.
There was like Santa Claus on New Year's Eve. So like to this day, my family celebrates like New Year's Eve Day, which is like the equivalent of Christmas. There's a Christmas tree, which is actually a New Year's tree.
So there's a Santa Claus
that's called like Father Frost.
Oh, right. Wow. So in some places he's called Father Christmas.
But it's called Father Frost.
Father Frost in Russia.
How it translates, I think, into English. It's dead.
So December 25th has no meaning.
No, not. Well, I mean, it does now for Eastern Orthodox,
right?
You know, practicing Russians or whatever, but in Soviet times, like you weren't allowed to do that, so it was all like centered around New Year's. So New Year's Eve was like the one, and so we did have.
So it's just kind of like a Mr. Snow figure. I'm in charge of the frost.
His name is Father Frost.
Okay,
FYI, yes,
basically Mr. Snow.
Uh huh.
He's into snow. That's all the definition he has if he's not Santa Claus.
Okay, thank you.
or like Mr. New Year. He's in charge of the year.
Or
starting.
His name is Father Frost, and he's okay, the same thing as Santa Claus. So, but it's like the same concept. And so, my little sister is way younger than me and my brothers. We're all like in our 20s, and my sister is now 15. So when she was little, like there's a 9-year age gap between her and my little brother, and like my little brother was obviously old enough to not believe in it, but like not old enough to be delicate about like a little kid needing to know there's a Santa Claus, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that mystery got ruined for her pretty early too, that I don't remember how much I believed or not. Like I can't remember the day I stopped believing, but I'm sure I did. Like I was like, yeah, Father Frost, like bring his presents or whatever.
What was the day that you stopped believing in the Soviet Union?
When my family
1989.
Ain't nobody love it, but yeah. Yes. When I was 2 years old, I stopped believing in it.
Yeah. It's like, why is the wall coming down? Man.
No, so happy. But yeah.
Yeah, I think there may have even been a brief period of time where I believed in Santa Claus. I just thought he was the guy who was bringing all the other kids' presents and not me.
Well, yeah. That does suck, yeah.
Like, it's like, what did I do?
Yeah.
I didn't choose to be chosen.
So Thurman Merman is disappointed to find candy corn in his advent calendar. Candy corn, one of the most despised of candies, although I kind of like it.
I liked it.
I think it's underrated.
Yeah, I agree. There's something to it.
Yeah, it doesn't taste like corn, of course.
Right.
For anyone
who hasn't had candy corn.
I don't know what it tastes like if it's not.
Tastes like candy corn. Duh.
Yeah, it's just that candy corn
like
taste.
Plastic and sugar mixed together.
It just had that very plasticine taste to it.
Yeah.
Like you ate, like you accidentally put a plastic toy in your mouth and it turned out to taste good for some reason.
Yeah.
So Zane, what are your favorite and least favorite candies?
Oh, my favorite candies tend to be the gummy kind that are coated in sour salt.
Those are good.
Oh, like a Sour Patch Kid.
Like, I like Sour Patch Kids, right. Sour Gummy Bears, Sour Gummy Worms. there's also this kind of fruit roll-up type of thing that they now sell at the... like the Latino bodega next to my house.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I don't know what those snacks are called.
And then there's this one that's like a roll that they like smashed a bunch of gushers together and then covered it in sour salt.
Whoa.
Or something. I don't know.
I love like the detail. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's your least favorite though.
Although I also feel like bodegas will have like tamarind candies. Oh, yeah, I don't get that at all.
One of them by my house has just a big Ziploc bag full of crickets.
I've seen those.
It's like covered in lime and chili, and they're like, "I'm like, what the fuck is that?" And they're like, "You want to try it?" And I'm like,
"I've actually had like crickets covered in nacho cheese dust."
Ew!
Because they sell those, and you know, sometimes you'll get them as like gag gifts in a white elephant giveaway or something.
And you ate it?
I've never.
Yeah, I mean, it just tastes crispy.
Wait, where do you live?
In Koreatown.
Oh, okay, makes sense.
Yep.
Oh wait. So what is your least favorite?
My least favorite. I'm lactose intolerant, so I can't eat any
milk chocolate.
Oh, that is sad.
No Snickers bars. No Milky Ways. No Mounds.
Wow.
But have you ever? I mean, but that doesn't mean you don't find them tasty. Do you find them tasty? If you had a Milky Way,
he has taste buds. So
I haven't. I'm sure it'd be great. I haven't had one in a very long time, so I don't really remember.
I just feel like even if... Aww. I mean, I can't say because I'm not, but I feel like even if I was lactose intolerant, I would just have ice cream once in a while.
A lot of people do that.
And face the consequences.
A lot of people do that, but for me, it's, you know, not to get too personal, but I am extremely lactose intolerant. So if I eat, like, a pat of butter, I'll be sick for 3 days. So if I ate a scoop of ice cream, I don't know.
You'd be hospitalized.
Wow.
It would have
been very bad. Okay. It would be very bad. So, yeah, I mean, that's serious. Then.
Yeah, don't listen to Josh's bad advice to eat lactose stuff.
That's not just like I'm going to spend an hour in the bathroom tonight. That's
no.
It could kill me.
Yeah, that happens to some people, and that's fine.
Oh.
I'm not worried about it.
That's enough to make it your not favorite. Everything with milk.
I totally get that. I mean, then you're just psychologically going to associate milk with, like, you know, dying, and you're not going to taste good.
Yeah, why would you want that? Why would you want that? Yeah. What's the weirdest candy?
I mean, I don't... Yeah, okay, so nacho cheese covered crickets.
That is the weirdest.
That's not a candy.
That's not a candy.
There's nothing sweet about it. But maybe like a chocolate covered cricket would be gross.
Oh,
they have things like that.
If I could eat a milk chocolate candy, the one I would not want to eat is Rolos. I think those are gross.
Oh, that's funny.
It's crazy.
No. You like those?
It's chocolate and caramel. What's wrong?
They're kind
of
dry.
I used to have Rolos. I liked Rolos.
If I want chocolate and caramel, I'll eat a Caramello.
You know what I think that we're... Okay. Yeah, but I like Rolos more than Caramellos.
I love
that's
Reese's.
Personal taste.
Oh.
You know what I think the weirdest candy is?
What?
Wax lips.
Is that not a candy?
They're not a candy, though. They're wax lips.
You could eat it.
You can eat a candle, but that doesn't make it a candy.
Josh was like, I don't know. The weirdest candy I ever had was a candle.
But they sell them.
Scented. It tastes good.
But they sell them in candy shops.
That
and you're
is
supposed
true.
To put it in your mouth and it tastes good.
There's
but
something.
That's like, nah. Because, you know, there's latex gloves that taste good. They're not candy.
Right.
They're just supposed to taste good because they're in your mouth.
Wait, what?
I ate a banana-flavored condom once. Delicious.
Why do you put latex gloves in your mouth?
You wouldn't, but like I've been to like the doctor or dentist when they're doing stuff in your mouth, and the latex gloves are like strawberry-flavored. That's not candy.
Well, then what's the weirdest candy?
I don't know. Something with insects in it. Sounds pretty weird.
Edible underwear. That's the weirdest candy.
Yeah.
But it might taste good, so it's not that weird.
It's weird just because of what it is.
You know, I was disappointed when I actually found edible underwear in the flesh. It's just a fruit roll-up.
Oh,
it's
is
just
it?
It's just a fruit roll-up you're putting on somebody. There's no way it would work as
actual
underwear.
See, that's not that weird, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not that weird. It's like
it wouldn't work
it's like,
as real it's, underwear.
It would not work as underwear. It's like
maybe
underwear-shaped
that's the weirdest
fruit roll-up.
Piece of clothing, but I don't think it's the weirdest piece of
exactly.
Candy.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Or what about, like, you know what nickel nips are?
No.
It's like five... It's like five wax bottles.
Oh, yeah, I know
inside
those.
The little bottles are like a little bit of liquid.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen those in a long
what
time.
What is that?
Those are good.
I mean, it's candy. Because it's just like liquid candy.
Yeah, and another one that's also weird in the same vein is that liquor stick where you get the little stick thing and you dip it in the...
Fun dip.
Yeah.
Fun dip.
That one is weird.
That's fucking weird.
Okay, but like maybe Pop Rocks are weird, but good.
Oh, they're weird. Nah, I don't like those.
No, I don't eat them as a thing, but they're like interesting. And there's a drink at... What's it called? La Pabelle that has... It's like you know, champagne and strawberry stuff, and has like Pop Rocks on the rim. It's just like insane. It's really good though.
It's Pop Rocks and Coke. You just you pour it in and you take a shot.
There you go.
That can't be good for you.
Oh, so funny.
All right, one more question before we get to the movie reviews. When Willie notices bullies beating up Thurman, he kicks their ass in return. And it's actually kind of a sweet redemptive moment in the film. Were you bullied as a kid ever? And did you ever get in fistfights as a kid?
Both, yes. When I was really young, I got bullied by these twins.
What?
Yeah, and their names were Jacob and Jason Pyle, and they were these like swamp people, and they're so mean. And they called me homophobic things all the time. And then another guy whose name I won't say, because he ended up joining a cult, and they found him in the basement of this building naked.
What?
And starving, and he'd given away all his money, and he had inherited a bunch of money from his dad.
Whoa.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and that kid choked me like my first day of kindergarten until I almost passed out.
Oh my god.
But then
that happened to me, actually. It got choked until I almost passed out by a kid.
Oh really?
My god. I'm sorry, you guys.
I was playing, it's one of my really vivid childhood memories. I was playing with the kid in my backyard, and he wasn't a bad kid. He was just one of those kids who acted out a lot. And there was some rubber hose, there was like a length of rubber hose that was in like the back of my backyard. He said, you know what would be funny is if we wrapped the rubber hose around your neck, and then he like just started running around me in a circle, like wrapping the hose tighter and tighter.
Be funny.
God, idiot.
And then at one point my mom ran out and started screaming like, stop it.
Yeah, he could have like decapitated you.
And at some point it might have decapitated me.
That's horrifying. When I got to seventh grade, I'd taken a lot of karate classes, and then I got in a lot of fights and I won.
Nice.
That's cool.
And I built
that's
a reputation.
Cool when you can, get revenge on your bullies.
Yeah. Yeah. Revenge.
Oh, so you became like the badass kid.
Well,
yeah,
only
look at those tattoos.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Nice. But the funny thing is, like, I was still super skinny. It was just like, I feel like when you're a kid, it's just how brutal are you? That's still true as an adult.
How far are you willing to go in a fight?
That's one of the lessons from this film.
Actually, to think in a lot of fights, that's what it comes down to. It's not who's the stronger attacker. It's just
who
wants
it. It's like who's scrappier, too, I think.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't take a whole lot of pressure to rip off someone's ear, for example.
It doesn't?
No, think about like...
Let's have a demonstration.
Wait, what? Just
think about it. It's not that attached to your head. It's like cartilage, and it's kind of loosely hanging to begin with.
How would you rip it off? You just rip it off.
Just go grab into it and just rip it.
Have you done that?
No, of course I haven't done that.
I don't know. You just say like it's so easy.
I'm just saying...
It's just like ripping a piece of beef jerky.
Okay, stop!
That's the limit. Like, if you are willing to go to that level of brutality,
you could do it,
and it's going to probably mess up somebody's balance. If you just like hit somebody, cup them in the ears, you know, like burst their eardrum, it's going to like mess them up. Or if you gouge somebody's eyes.
Yeah.
That's the
thing you're supposed to go for is the eyes, just fuck them up.
Yeah. That's like a pretty easy thing, but most people aren't going to do that because...
That's what they say at a shark attack. If you're attacked by a shark, you go for the eyes, punch him in the eyes.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
I mean, eyes are just kind of the natural weak spots of most edibles.
That's
what are
true.
They?
Yeah. Wait, but
except
is it
for
true?
A snake, because they'll get you by smell.
So as men, you can answer this question, but like if you do kick someone in the balls, like that'll really throw them off, right? Or is that it's not as much
I
as
feel
not like,
that. I feel like eyes are worse than balls. I would rather somebody kick me in the balls than try to gouge my eyes out.
Yeah.
But I'm saying for me, I'm not going to get in a... Like, I don't think I'm going to get in a fight with a guy in that way. It's not going to be a bar fight. But, like, what if I was attacked? Should I go for the balls or the eyes?
Think about the most sensitive part of your cooter. If a man kicked you there, and then you were like,
But this most sensitive part is probably my ovaries are in my body. Isn't that
you would feel it up in your ovaries. I don't know.
Well,
if somebody punched you in the ovaries.
Yeah, no, it's like you have your balls on the inside.
Yeah.
Right, so what I'm saying is like, okay, TMI time, right, guys? But like, women get periods, right? And it's painful.
No.
But I'm saying you get really bad cramps.
Right, right.
And that's really debilitating sometimes. So I would imagine if I got kicked in the balls and it felt anything like that, that would like knock me off.
But would you rather have really bad period cramps or be pepper sprayed in the face?
But let's say I don't have pepper spray. I'm asking like gouging versus
if somebody kicks you like really hard in the balls, it could definitely like debilitate you. I think it would make you feel like queasy. You would feel disoriented.
I just want to fight off an attack, you know?
I think if I was actually in a fight, adrenaline would I would keep going after getting kicked in the balls.
That happens a lot. Yeah, because people get shot and they'll still be like, just coming at you, you know? And it's just like, okay.
But if your eyes are seriously injured, you might just not be able to see whoever you're going for.
Yeah. That's true.
All right, I'm gonna do balls and then eyes.
Okay.
Go because balls, the, eyes, the one, ears, tongue.
The 1-2.
We're not the guy's tongue.
Yeah, 1-2. It's a 1-2-3-4.
Colombian necktie.
Have like, yeah, I usually have like long nails too. So actually, I think I can go for that.
It's really hard to grab a tongue, just so you know. I tried to do it recently and it did not work.
In a fight?
No.
Oh, okay.
Let's have a demonstration.
I was doing these online stage voice exercises because I always get hit in improv with this like, you have a horrible stage presence. No one can understand what you're saying.
Oh, no.
And it's not that extreme, but that's what they mean. Yeah. And so I was like, oh. And so part of the instructions was grab your tongue, pull it out. And it's like, but it says get a washcloth or something so you can get a good grip on it.
We both simultaneously grabbed their tongue just to see if it was difficult.
So you can get a good grip on it with a washcloth.
I mean, my tongue doesn't go out very far.
Mine will go into
Oh, you
my
got
nose.
A good grip on it, though.
I got a decent grip on
I
it.
I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm. The tongue kind oh, of. Nice. That's yeah, you're touching your nose with
that's
it.
That's right.
You know what that means?
I can touch my nose.
I don't know.
Yep. It means she can touch her nose with her tongue. Yeah, the tongue kind of has a mind of its own. Like, you know, like, if you've ever, like, had, like, serious work done at the dentist and they say, like, you know, try to get your tongue away from that tooth, sometimes your tongue will just keep going back to it. At least that happens to me.
Oh, right. Like, don't touch
that
it.
Happens,
and then your tongue is like, no, but I have to touch right. it.
Yeah. Now that you told me not to touch that particular tooth with my tongue, now I feel like I need
it's
to.
Yeah, your tongue always wants to touch things. Like, it's always, like, going for it.
Maybe your weird. Tongue always wants to touch things.
Okay, shut up, Josh. Okay? God.
I can't do it.
And with that, let's dive into the movie of a week. The week. Movie of a week in a segment called The Big Reviewski. I kind of want to kick this off by talking a little bit about how this movie was made and why we're covering it on the Coen Brothers podcast, seeing it as it was not technically written or directed by the Coen Brothers.
Uh-huh.
So, this originally came about. It was written by two guys named Glenn Ficarra and John Requa. They're Hollywood screenwriters. They've written movies like Cats and Dogs, Crazy Stupid Love. You know, they've been in the studio system. They've written hits, but they're not like incredibly like, you know, critically acclaimed writers or anything.
Uh-huh.
But they had a meeting with Joel and Ethan Coen, and they pitched them. They said, we want to write a movie that you guys direct. And the Coen brothers said, you know, we usually only direct our own stuff. But we've had this idea that we've been kicking around about a drunk Santa Claus and a little person elf that keeps him in line. And Ficarra and Requa said, okay, we're going to write this, and we're going to give it to you, and maybe you'll direct it. So they wrote out the story that the Coen brothers came up with.
The Coen brothers came up with it?
The Coen brothers had that initial idea.
I see. Okay.
Let's do a movie about a drunk Santa Claus.
Okay.
That initially came from them.
Got it, okay.
Then these two guys went off and wrote it and gave it to the Coen brothers. Coen brothers said, you know what, we're going to do a rewrite on it. Uh-huh. According to an interview I read with Terry Zwigoff, who is the director of this film, they didn't do much to change the story. They just added a lot more curse words.
Huh.
Oh. Things like changing lines like thank God to thank the fuck Christ. Basically adding a whole bunch of creative swearing, which there was plenty of creative swearing in this film.
Oh, yeah.
It's part of its charm.
A huge part of its charm. But they decided they still didn't want to direct it to themselves. So they ended up giving it to Terry Zwigoff, who at the time, he's the director of movies like Crumb, if you'd seen the movie Crumb, Ghost World. Mm-hmm. Kind of specializes in movies about, you know, misanthropic weirdos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's great.
Which this felt very strongly of a piece with his other films. Weirdly enough, while part of the reason I wanted to cover this here is because I really, really like this film. It doesn't feel that much, probably less than any other movie we've covered here, it doesn't really feel like a Coen Brothers movie. Despite them having come up with the story.
It doesn't, though.
Yeah.
There is something about the vibe that was like a little bit off in a good way. That was like a Coen Brothers way that was sort of like a little offbeat. So
there's definitely elements. Obviously all the fucks, it rivals Big Lebowski for
amount
of fucks
used
to describe.
Speaking of that too, in Big Lebowski you don't hear it.
Right.
Well, you don't hear, at least I don't. Like, I barely heard them say fuck, but then it turns out they say it like 2 times a minute, and I just didn't realize that.
Because it seems natural there. Here, totally. they really
and
highlight
it. Here, like, every time he says fuck, I was like, oh my God, but like, there's kids. Like,
yeah, there's kids around.
It adds something because there's kids around in like every scene. That's a huge part of the charm of this, is just watching people act like irredeemable, crazy, swearing assholes in front of children.
Yeah, but it does have this thing like this Coen Brothers. Early Coen Brothers thing, at least, with the idea that it's a Santa who's not just a bad Santa, but he's part of, he's a safecracker.
Yeah.
Like, I think that is, that to me says, like, I see them in that. I don't know if that was part of the original concept.
Having, or, you know, adding the crime element, that's a strong Coen Brothers thing, because they usually do a crime story in some way.
And I loved, that was part of my favorite thing that I didn't, I mean, obviously it was very, it was a character piece, like it wasn't heavily, like it wasn't a crime drama
That's the thing, there are these elements, there's, you know, there's crime elements. It started and ended with a little bit of Billy Bob Thornton narration, which is, you know, a major Coen Brothers motif.
Which was added in.
Which I do believe that was added in, even in the unrated version.
No, I guess in the director's cut, it's not in there.
I think you're right about that. I think in both the theatrical release and the DVD release, we watched the DVD unrated version that came out. There are three different versions.
I watched the one that's on Netflix.
That's what I watched too. But I read about it first.
Okay.
And the difference is minimal between the unrated and the rated, but the director's cut is pretty different.
From what I understand, the main difference between the unrated and the rated is just that a lot of the swearing in the dialogue was toned down.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the story and the direction was pretty much the same.
Pretty much. There were some scenes missing from when he goes to Florida. Should I talk about that now or later?
No, go ahead.
So when he goes to Florida, there were a lot of extra scenes in the unrated. Like, I guess he goes to a strip club. I did not see that. He robs a house. Did not see that.
Oh, you didn't see? Okay, see, I watched that.
Yeah,
I watched a different version than you guys.
I know. But I read about the version you watched, so I would know what you were talking about.
I loved that, actually. When he does show up in Miami, because you guys didn't see it. Yeah, he just like wanders into a valet parking lot, just steals some keys, steals a car, drives over to that person's mansion and just starts like destroying the mansion and stealing shit and just acting like a prick in general.
So you liked it better? Because the reviewer I read, he said he did not like it. He thought the pacing was a little weird with all that stuff.
I thought the pacing was right in the version, at least, that we watched.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
I don't know. I saw the studio version about 10 years ago, and then I only just watched the unrated version now. So
you saw that in the theater?
For me to compare. Yeah.
You saw the original?
I did see the original.
Oh,
in the theater.
Cool.
I don't know. Terry Zwigoff, his take on it, because I got a lot of facts from this interview he did. He also called the movie Juno a retarded ghost world, which I loved. Terry Zwigoff is this kind of very irascible character. I almost imagine him being a little bit like Billy Bob Thornton in this movie himself. But he said the studio release of Bad Santa cut out a lot of the swearing and also poured a lot of kind of fake sentiment onto it. He said, "Go to Target and look at who your target audience is and realize you're fucked." basically thinking they toned down my classic to make it palatable to the masses.
Mm. How old was he when he directed this movie? Do you know?
I know he's in his like late 50s now, so I'm going to say he was in his late 40s then.
He was up there.
Interesting guy. He got started movie making fairly late. His big breakthrough was this movie called Crumb. I don't know if you guys saw it. It's fantastic. Yeah. He spent 9 years directing this documentary about his friend Robert Crumb, the cartoonist, and his family's situation. He gets really fucked up.
Interesting. I should watch that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's really good. But to me, at least, this felt more like a Terry Zwigoff movie than a Coen Brothers movie, because it did feel so thematically of a piece with that guy's other movies.
Yeah, I felt that, but it did seem less stylized than like Ghost World. There were things in it like that I would say, oh yeah, I can kind of see him in this and the way he did that or whatever, but it wasn't so comic booky as Ghost World or something.
I mean, it's funny because both of them on their own, I think, are usually more stylized. This movie, while Willie Stokes is this very crazy character, the world that it's taking place in is pretty recognizably our world.
Yeah.
It's not super stylized at all.
Yeah, it's not like a period piece.
Everybody, you know, there's a few little, the grandma and stuff's like a little out.
Right.
But for the most part,
there's moments that are a little real. Out there. Yeah, it's you know, kind of the comic effect of the film is, what if you drop this character into a basically realistic world? And
except for that kid is not real.
The kid is also not real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which worked, but he's not real. I'm just saying, like, his...
To some degree. I mean, like, I can think of, like, some kids who are, like, little like that.
yeah. But I mean, like, he was like the actual extreme of that character, which was great.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It was
slightly, it was an extreme.
You know? Yeah, yeah. No, he's just an especially pathetic, sad kind of picked up.
He broke my heart. I can't.
Yeah, God. Yeah, just that guy's.
Ovaries,
just
you guys. That guy's
face.
Holy. Oh,
this
I was just
makes
like,
my ovaries hurt.
This movie hit you in the ovaries.
Dying. Huh?
This movie hit you in the ovaries.
It really did.
So you know what it feels like to be kicked in the balls.
Yeah, that's my overall feeling of the movie.
Despite all that, and despite all the fighting over the film, and feeling like there's kind of a lot of different people involved in making it, and I know that. Even though the Coen brothers were producers on it, Zwigoff and the Coens had some serious fights on it. The Coen brothers really did not want to cast Tony Cox as Marcus. They said, I don't feel like a black actor is right for the part. I guess they wrote it as a white character. So I got that. We don't care.
That
he's
guy
just
was
hilarious.
Great.
He was really great. Good.
He was, I've never seen him in any other movie other than this. But
no,
he's great.
He knocked it out. Wait, what else was he in?
I don't even know. You know what? I'm going to look it up on IMDb right now.
I've seen him before, but I don't know where.
Yeah, I thought he looked familiar, but I couldn't place him.
Maybe on television.
I mean, he's definitely best known for this movie. Apparently, he was in Return of the Jedi.
Oh yeah, sure.
Who was he in Return of the Jedi?
He was an Ewok.
Was he?
I don't know.
He was an Ewok.
Yeah.
I guess that's not that surprising. In Leprechaun 2, he played African-American Leprechaun.
Tight.
He played a character named Dwarf Guard in The Silence of the Hams, which I think is a Silence of the Lambs parody. It's got to be tough when you're a little guy. You just that's the only parts that are available to you for the most part.
But that's also good in a way.
You've got a niche. Yeah.
Well, you know when they're making the Lord of the Rings movie, there were little people who were really mad, and they were just like, why are you casting all these normal-sized people?
Yeah, right.
How dare you?
Messed up.
Right, exactly. Like, good roles for us only show up so often, and you're just going to cast Elijah Wood, who's short, but not that short. You're just making him seem a little bit shorter.
Yeah, there were protests around it and stuff, and the guy who played Willow, I think, was involved.
God, when they announced that they were turning Game of Thrones into a TV show, how badly do you think everybody wanted to be Tyrion Lannister?
I don't know, because I don't watch Game of Thrones. So I couldn't tell you.
Well, you should.
We all did. We all wanted to be that.
I wanted to be Tyrion Lannister, God damn it. But no, there was a serious fight there. It ended with, apparently, they're not on super good terms anymore.
Really?
And then Terry Zwigoff seriously fought with, the Weinsteins. This is a Weinstein production.
Oh, yeah.
And at one point, they showed the Coen brothers a cut of the film they'd made, and the Coens told them, you tried to make it into American Pie. It's a piece of shit now. It ended with everyone yelling, fuck you, at each other.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I kind of like that. It's sort of like my dream to just like tell everyone to fuck off sometimes. Like, it's great.
Just to tell a bunch of really important
people. I do,
people.
Yeah, it's a funny way to go.
Especially because I imagine them as such like Midwestern mild-mannered guys
most of
the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't even imagine them like saying fuck you to Harvey Weinstein. That's got to be intimidating.
Wow.
Oh, no.
But despite that troubled production...
Didn't ruin their careers.
It sure didn't. Despite the troubled production, it's almost surprising how well this movie works.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I liked it.
Yeah, despite the director's intents and everything, it's funny.
Really funny.
And the characters are awesome. Just like the characterization's so different and interesting. And
it's not even, I realized, it's not even like there's a lot of jokes in this movie. There's plenty of creative swearing. But the reason it's so funny is just it all comes from character. It just all comes from putting this character in a interesting situation and seeing what happens.
For sure.
And I totally respect that. And the only reason it works is because of Billy Bob Thornton and what he's doing here.
Okay, but also the kid. What's up with the kid now? Can you tell us?
I can look that up.
I love that kid in Trick or Treat. Have you seen that horror anthology movie?
Oh,
it's great.
He's in that?
Really good. Yeah, he plays the same character basically.
He's like really good at that character though.
Yeah.
How much lettuce do you want?
Yeah, that was awesome.
His name is Brett Kelly. He's only credited in this movie as the kid, even though they eventually reveal his name is Thurman Merman.
He has a bedroom. It says Thurman.
I know.
He hasn't been working a ton lately. He doesn't have any credits from the last 4 years or so. He was in Unaccompanied Minors. He was in The Sandlot 2, which I didn't even know was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
He was in one of the Masters of Horror movies.
Did he look the same? Did he
I don't know. The picture they show of him here is the picture from Bad Santa. Let me see if I can find an adult Brett Kelly.
Took his money and went somewhere fun.
Because I guess he'd be like, I don't know, like 18 now?
No.
Yeah. Of course.
Was he 8?
Oh, he looks like he turned out pretty good. He kind of looks like
he's not bad. He's not
what's
bad.
His name?
I mean,
no.
It kind of looks like Conan O'Brien.
But I see more Andy Richter.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like if Conan O'Brien and Andy Richter had a baby.
Yeah, pretty much.
One of those things they used to do.
Yeah.
But he still looks surprisingly like that kid. He just
broke my heart so much, though, you guys. Like, the first time he got off the bus and the kids were mean to him, I was just like, I hate the world. This is so awful.
I know.
Well, yeah. The lesson I learned also from this film is you can have a character like Billy Bob Thornton who honestly doesn't have much of an arc for the first two acts. He is the same person. He shows very little sign of like change until the end, but for whatever reason, because I guess because it fits his character that he's gonna go. Can I say this?
We're not going in any sort of order.
Okay. That he goes and beats up the kids and he's like, this is my life changing moment. Yeah. That's so good.
And then Marcus just replies, man, you are fucked up.
Yeah. And he earned, but that was his earned change. And even though like he's just like shitty. You know, 75 pages of shitty. Yeah. Like most characters, it seems impossible. As an arc to be like, okay, now he's gonna make this change. He's like, no, because the change was based in these fucked up things that he'd done.
It really worked because of that.
They held off on that eventual redemption moment as long as possible.
That was cool.
And that's what makes it work.
It was very satisfying in that way because I kept noticing at a certain point too, like act two or so, I'm like, no change, like no nothing.
He's still just like, what the fuck is your problem, kid?
Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you know, he was still so mean and everything. And he was still mean at the end, but then he had those like touching moments of like, he beat the kids up and then he bought the pink elephant. It was just like, aww.
To me, the whole movie comes down to that pink elephant moment at the very end.
Yeah.
Like, you have to ask yourself, did they earn that moment or did they not? And if they didn't earn that moment, almost none of this is going to work for you, I think. But they did.
Yeah, I think they did.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, up to that point, I felt kind of ambivalent about the film. I was like, this is kind of fun. Like, I could take this or leave it. When that happened, I was like, I don't know, this is a lot cooler than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, right. It was satisfying.
Which is crazy, because there's only like 15 minutes left in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, this is good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a case study. Like, you just take this guy who seems like he doesn't care about anybody or anything, including himself. It's just kind of like shitting his way through life and destroying everything he touches, but you let him hang out with, you know, this incredibly pathetic kid long enough, and at first he's continuing to just not care about the kid at all, and he's still treating him like garbage, but you just by like spending time with him, you just like almost by accident he starts being nice to him
because he has no choice, humanity, right? That's like what's so interesting is that like for two acts, like zero humanity, like it was just like, I'm fucking here. I'm drunk. I don't give a fuck. Like, that was just, and he kept it up. And I thought, even though, like, I wasn't, like, necessarily, like, actively liking the movie, but just seeing that happen was, like, really satisfying, too. Because I just felt like after certain points, I'd be like, wow, he still doesn't care. Wow, he, like, still doesn't care. And then when he finally, like, has that human connection, it was so interesting to, like, finally happen. But
right, because you can almost tell it. You can see it in Billy Bob's performance that, like, he's almost surprised by it. Like, why do I all of a sudden, like, care a little bit about this annoying kid who's been following me around?
Mm-hmm.
But he starts to, and he starts...
But then it's obscene because he should care because he's living in a house.
Right.
Because of this kid who is pretending that he's Santa Claus or whatever, like... He was so inhumane the whole time. That was kind of amazing. Like, you would think that he'd be like, wow, what great luck. I can just live in this house with this stupid-ass dead grandma almost, right? And no appreciation for our circumstances. That was really amazing.
No. Yeah, exactly.
Very huge commitment to being
just like, okay, well, this is going to work out for me. You know, I need a place to hide away, and so I can just, like, you know, live in this mansion and take all the food and fuck everybody else.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but there's just no gratitude. Usually humans have, like, some sense of gratitude.
But it's like in everything he did, even when he was playing Santa... He was just like, that is, I'm sure, not the best job in the world, but if you know that you're going to have this huge payoff in the end and you only have to do it for however many months a year, then, like, wouldn't you be grateful that, like oh, I get way more money than most. I get most of my money. I get tons of money for 2 months.
And it like takes so seemingly, like, extreme. No work whatsoever. Yeah.
You just have to be nice to kids and you, like, can't even... bother to do that.
The fuck you want.
Always the edge of, like, getting fired.
Peeing on them and stuff.
One great quote from Marcus on it is, you're an emotional fucking cripple. Your soul is dog shit. Every single fucking thing about you is ugly. It's like, man, harsh, but...
Yeah, but then Marcus sucks too. He was going to kill him.
Well, then he calls him out. He says, what is wrong with you people? He's like, what do you mean? And he's like, no, it's not about killing me. He's like, what do you need all that stuff for? Christmas.
It's like, oh, that was great. That was really good.
What is he talking about? But he's like, yeah, that does make sense.
I gotta say, like, with every Billy Bob performance in all these movies, I just, like, love him more and more.
Why did he stop showing up in movies? I miss him. After rewatching this, and The Man Who Wasn't There and others, I'm like, I want to see him start with movies again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's good. He's great. It might be my favorite performance of his. I haven't seen Sling Blade. I haven't seen a couple of his big ones, but he's so good in this.
Yeah.
His comic performance and his timing, and he's so completely inhabiting this character.
Yeah.
He's a weird actor, though, because he was kind of older when he started.
How old is he?
I don't know, but when he was in Sling Blade, he had to be in his 40s or 50s, right?
So you think that's when he started, in his 40s?
He's 59.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay.
So he's in his 40s.
He looks older than he is, though, maybe.
Well, that was an independent film, and I don't even think he, like, lived in...
When's his first IMDb?
Let me look. Because, no, he wasn't, but no, but that...
Very inspiring,
but
too.
Sling Blade isn't that old. He must have been old when Sling Blade came out.
It was not.
Is that his really first movie?
That was the one that he was, like...
It was his breakout known performance.
For, yeah. Yeah, but, like, he might have been acting before that.
Right? I'm sure he was, but I want to say he was living, like...
What did he do before?
In the South. I don't know.
I'm going to look this up.
I know what Steve Buscemi did before.
What?
He was a fireman.
No way.
Yeah, he was a New York fireman.
I can't see that.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy?
Wait,
like,
when did he start acting?
I don't know. He was relatively young. That was like his career job. And then I guess he was probably moonlighting acting.
Yeah.
But he's in, like, you go back and like all these like 90s like independent films. He's in, there's like Jim Jarmusch movie, Down by Law, the Memphis one. I can't remember.
Was it Midnight Train? Was he in that?
Something. Mystery Train.
Mystery Train.
Yeah, he's in Mystery Train. He's in the best segment. He's acting with the guy from the club, with Joe Strummer.
He was doing, just great character bits for a while before he became like Steve Buscemi.
Yeah. Huh.
Okay, and Billy Bob Thornton for a while before Sling Blade, which came out in 96. So he was like 41 when that came out.
Okay.
But even before that, he had, you know, recurring role in the Outsiders TV series.
But when did he start?
The very first credit is in 1986.
Oh, okay. So he'd already been acting for like...
But a lot of TV movies.
He was 31.
Yeah.
That's old to start.
That is true.
Well, it might have been his first. Yeah.
Hold on. I'm going to look at his bio because I'm curious now too. Oh, you know what? I think I did know this. He started as a musician.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he played drums and sang in a band for a while, and then in 1981, he moved to L.A. to pursue an acting and writing career, but was working on the side as a singer and a drummer. He tried for a while to sell some scripts that nobody bought. He at one point landed in the hospital with heart problems due to malnutrition.
Aww.
This was, you know, and this was like in the 80s, so he would have been in his, you know, 20s.
Cool. Malnutrition. He was going for it.
Yeah.
Guys, try harder.
Commitment.
Yeah. Don't eat as much. Don't work to eat.
So it was just a long, slow build up to Sling Blade.
But he was 31 with his first credit. That's great. I love that.
It's cool. It is kind of inspiring, huh?
Very.
Yeah.
I knew I loved him.
It is different for men.
How dare you? Get out of this podcast. Bye.
No.
Not true. Glenn Close also started when she was 30. Boom.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were just making that up.
Nope.
That's
it's
great.
Fact.
That's amazing.
I think it is amazing.
Some people say that I look like a young Glenn Close.
You do look young, though.
Oh, I am.
How old are you?
I'm 19.
No, you're not.
No, you're not.
I'm not.
How old are you?
You don't have to say your age.
Nice to you.
Or we'll bleep it out.
Okay, it's beep.
So, yeah, the relationship between Willie and Marcus is interesting because for most of the movie, as bad as, you know, Marcus isn't like a nice guy, but Billy Bob seems like the worst guy. He's just like, he's a guy who's, you know, he's swearing and pissing himself in front of kids. And
yeah.
But by the end, it's as Billy Bob's arc goes towards redemption, he becomes a worse and worse guy. And he's almost, you know, kind of driven partly by his girlfriend, you know, becomes a toxic collaboration.
That was also such a, like, Asian girlfriend stereotype.
Do you know who?
It totally is.
Do you know who was playing his girlfriend? Lauren Tom.
Oh, yeah.
AKA the voice of Amy on Futurama.
Oh.
Yeah.
She doesn't have many lines in this film, though.
She doesn't have a ton of lines. But you can tell she's doing, like, the voice of Amy's mom from Futurama. It's like the same kind of stereotypical Asian lady voice.
Uh-huh. Actually, in the version that we watched, she might not have any lines.
She says a few things.
Really?
Yeah. There's a couple
what
things
she
said.
I forget. Yeah, she doesn't necessarily have a lot of memorable lines.
She says, maybe 1.5 lines. Because I remember that very specific stereotypical accent. I was like, okay.
Right.
Of course.
And Lauren, somebody, from Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, that was so funny.
So that character.
She's great.
What did you make, Jackie, what did you make of...
The voice of female characters?
Well, yes.
I always, she would never do that. Yeah. That's because in every Coen Brothers movie, they always have, a disconnect. That whole fuck me Santa thing was so weird, and
but could be true.
She had the justification. I grew up with a Jewish dad, so Santa was like forbidden fruit to me.
Right? Yeah. Do you so they buy definitely that for like a second? Spelled out the whole justification. Like, why does this character do this weird thing? Just justify it. It doesn't matter what it is. Like, that's what it was.
I think they had to, or else you're like, why the hell would she hang out with this guy? Right?
Yeah. No, because a lot of women are into men who are unavailable and like. Piss drunk losers because they're like, oh, but there's something so sweet about him. So that wasn't even that weird to me.
I guess there's a level of realism to that where every time he's like, fuck off, she's like, I like you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And also she says that, and then he says, oh, kind of like, oh, women's breasts or whatever he says. And she's like, yeah, kind of like that. And then the irony, of course, being that he was married
to Angelina Jolie,
and she had a double mastectomy.
Wait, what?
I'm trying to follow your logic at the point you're making.
His character says, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't matter.
Because I remember the line from the movie where she says, I kind of have a Santa fetish.
And he says,
kind of like my thing for boobs.
And then his, are they still married?
At that time?
Yeah.
I don't know.
2003.
Look it up.
Do you think him saying that caused her cancer?
Oh my God.
But then she didn't have cancer. That's right. She was just smart.
I guess.
Okay,
she was smart.
As I'm looking this up, take a guess. Do you think Billy Bob and Angelina were still married in 2003?
Yes.
I would say yes. That seems like a thing that was still happening.
Hold on.
Although, you know what? At this point, I bet you that's when Brad and Jennifer were together, which I feel like was after. I wouldn't be surprised if it was more like 2000 when it was Angelina and Billy Bob.
What about Tom Cruise and...
Nicole Kidman. I don't know, 2000?
What about Tom Cruise and Penelope Cruz?
They got divorced in 2003.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Probably because of this movie.
That's what did it.
She's like, this is the real you.
Now I finally see you for who you really are.
She seems pretty cool. Yeah, Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, you know she's... Yeah. You know what? She's got some stuff going on.
She does?
I think she's going places. She's got a very promising career.
So you don't think the things that I say on this podcast are going to affect her one way or the other?
I don't think it's like a...
I don't think she's going to listen and be like, what does he really think that of me?
What about the Lauren lady from Gilmore Girls? I want her back.
Oh, she might, because what's she doing lately?
I don't know, she was great. She was on that show for like 7 seasons, so...
Yeah.
The other girl, the younger girl in Gilmore Girls, she ended up...
Alexis Bledel marrying what's his face from Mad Men?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Pete Campbell.
She married Pete Campbell?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Good for him.
But you don't watch Mad Men.
I watched Mad Men up until the 5th season, and then I stopped.
Watch the 5th season.
I watched it up to the end of the pilot.
Wow.
And
that's
then
terrible.
I was like, no, thank you.
I don't even know why I stopped.
Wow, it's really good.
Because I really liked the 4th season. It's just at one point I just
character
like, okay, I feel like I don't need any more Mad Men. I don't know why.
How dare you?
I have to catch back up with it.
We're gonna do a Mad Men podcast. Okay.
I'm okay with that. I like the first 4 seasons.
Oh, you should invite me back.
Yeah, you can make me watch it.
The pilot.
Yeah. For the pilot episode.
Graham's debut novel came out last year. Someday, Someday Maybe, a novel, a work based on a fictionalization of her experiences in the New York acting scene of the 90s. So I'm going to guess she's not doing well.
She doesn't, dude,
if she was on a show for 7 seasons, she can do whatever she wants.
Like, I don't want to work anymore, but I'm not going to do Bad Santa type movies anymore that I have to degrade myself.
Well, she's starring in a movie called, she's in a movie called Merry Friggin' Christmas coming out next year, which sure sounds like a Bad Santa type movie.
Yeah, I would cast her in something.
Speaking of, actually, that seems like a good moment to point out that I feel like this movie's had a lot of influence over the last few years. It only made $60 million at the box office.
Yeah.
But first of all, like, the Bad Blank thing became a thing with Bad Teacher.
Bad Grandpa. Right.
Bad Grandpa. And the show Bad Judge that came out.
I don't know that one.
I don't know either.
Kate Walsh's Bad Judge. On your TV screens.
On your TV screens.
I know. You should have been Bad Judge, Jackie.
I'm a good judge.
There was a Bad Teacher, right?
Yeah.
You already said that.
Cameron Diaz was a Bad Teacher.
Right. Yeah.
Weird.
But that's not the only way. I also feel like that kind of story, like that kind of comic anti-hero who's like seems really, really irredeemable, but then kind of gets redeemed towards the end of the movie has become more and more of a thing.
Do you think that in those movies, Bad Grandpa aside, they probably have like a more traditional arc? Don't you think?
That's the thing. I feel like every movie that's kind of at least modeled itself even a little bit after this film hasn't been willing to go as far with making the main character bad.
Right.
I think more and more it's just kind of like a lovably gruff guy who maybe has a hard exterior, but you can tell he's really a nice guy inside. This Willie Stokes is just a full-on asshole for most of this film.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that.
And even by the end...
So did Lauren.
You know, and even by the end, he only maybe gets a tiny bit better. Yeah. Not a whole lot better.
You know one that is similar? Young Adult. That is a similar arc.
Yeah.
I didn't see
that, but I know what you're talking about.
With Charlize Theron and Patton Oswalt and all these people. And... scripted by Diablo Cody.
That's right.
It was like
writer of the retarded Ghost World.
she took a note. She's just taking all Terry's whatever his name is notes.
Yeah,
pumping them out, pumping them into her own work. She's just rewriting Ghost World over and over.
Pretty much.
Evil Dead remake, Ghost World.
I love the use of music in this film. At first, I was like, what's with all the, you know, the happy classical Christmas music? But then I realized it was like an on-purpose choice. They're running through like Christmas movies' greatest hits.
I didn't even notice it in the music.
You know, it's Twas the Night Before Christmas and Silent Night and the Nutcracker.
It worked to the point that I didn't notice it, which is when I think music does well in a movie is when I don't notice it as being artificial. Because then I'm like, ugh, stop with the wall-to-wall music or whatever.
To me, it struck me as like just a perfect ironic counterpoint. Yeah. Because it is exactly the same music you'd hear in, you know, fucking Four Christmases or the Santa Claus. Or any other shitty Christmas movie, but here it's soundtracking not a stereotypical Christmas movie, so it all makes it that much funnier,
right? Yeah, I did like that, but that was another thing that made me think, oh, this is very different from Ghost World or something, where the music was like, oh, like or more art, non-traditional,
artsier, sure,
exactly.
This was intended to be a mainstream movie,
and it had a wide release.
Terry Zwigoff was like, this is me trying to make a Hollywood hit,
mm-hmm.
And unlike when the you know, and unlike when we talked about Intolerable Cruelty in movies like that, when the Coen brothers tried to make Hollywood hits, I feel like this was...
Yeah, they don't do it.
They don't do it well. Mm-mm. I feel like this was a much more successful stab at actually making it.
Are you talking about Cruel Intentions? The Coen brothers movie, Cruel Intentions?
I am not. Although if they had directed that.
I used to love Cruel Intentions. That's a segue to this because for some reason, it was like my favorite movie for like 5 years or something. And it was one of few movies where I could just like quote any part of it. And I hadn't even seen it that many times. But I just like...
It had such an impact on you.
I don't know why.
Like
it was
a brother
so
and sister. Something, something, something.
Weird. It was so weird. Music is pretty good.
I've still never seen it.
I've never seen it either.
No, you guys, it's kind of good. I should rewatch it now, like 15 years.
Is that
later,
what? Sarah Michelle Gellar and Ryan Felipe.
And what's her face?
Well, it's an adaptation of Dangerous Liaisons, which was an adaptation of that Kierkegaard book.
It is dangerous. Something about the cousin.
Dangerous liaison. No. My bad fake French coming back once again.
It was
that book is supposed to be good. Actually, I borrowed it from my cousin. I forgot to read it. I had to give it back. But let's go like cuisines.
They should remake it with Jeremy Irons and Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Two amazing comic actors have died since this movie came out. I was really sad to see Bernie Mac show up.
He's dead?
I forgot he's dead.
I didn't know. Yeah. I don't know.
What did he die of?
I forget, but it was...
Disappointment.
Yep. No, sarcoidosis.
What is that?
Chronic inflammation of the lungs and lymph nodes.
Oh.
Yeah, basically like complications from pneumonia. And,
oh, God.
Yeah.
I totally forgot that. But I knew it, but I completely forgot.
Really sad. No, it was super sad because he was, you know, like he had done the Bernie Mac show and like he was really taken off.
Yeah. Wait, and when did John Ritter die? It was 2003.
This was John Ritter's last performance.
That's so crazy because that still feels kind of recent to me.
Yeah.
And it's been 11 years?
John Ritter in particular, both this and about a year ago, I watched the movie Problem Child for the first time.
Oh, first time.
I'd never seen the movie Problem Child before, but I watched that and...
The Bowtie Killer.
Yeah. And it's actually an interesting comparison to this movie. It's almost like the reverse, where there you've got a horrible, irredeemable child and the parents who won't stop loving him and kind of redeems the kid a little bit.
Yeah.
But John Ritter's so good in that movie.
Yeah.
He's so perfect at playing that kind of slightly oblivious authority figure. Mm. And he does the same thing here, and he's really, really good.
He was in Sling Blade, right?
Was he? I don't remember.
I think so. Mm. He grew up... 30 minutes away from the small town I grew up in.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was in Nestling.
He grew up in East Texas, and his grandfather was a country singer named Tex Ritter. And he had a really interesting voice.
What'd it sound like?
He was like, I can't do it. But you should look it up. You should look up...
Tex Ritter?
Tex Ritter. There's there's one song I was thinking of. Rye Whiskey. That's a good one he sings.
But yeah, just his reaction when Willie says things like, oh, what, are you talking about my fuck stick? You're saying my gear don't work?
Oh,
and just like the way he winces, like, he's so good at it.
Yeah.
And you believe him as a guy who wouldn't actually fire these people. Because almost anybody would fire these people, like after one day of talking to children. But you almost believe he would be cowed into not doing it.
Yeah, he played it real. I felt in that moment especially because it was a weird exchange. That was a weird thing to say in that moment. I felt like he felt like a real like middle management kind of I'm a department store manager, or maybe I went to some, I'm an associate's degree.
Yeah.
Right.
Like Oasis. And I live in Phoenix.
Like Oasis, are you gonna use that kind of language in front of the children?
Yeah.
Which he does.
Yeah. He understands that these are things people say, but he recognizes it as being inappropriate and he feels torn as to whether he should set a boundary for the people or if he just like, I don't know. Is this something that people say now? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Like,
or later when
he won't call it, like he won't make a decision. No. So just kind of like, maybe this, maybe that.
Yeah. He's relying on Bernie Mac to make the decisions. Yeah. And Bernie Mac eventually decides, I'm just going to join in on the plot.
He's like, you can't beat Darwin. That's what he says. Something like, it's a Darwinian thing. Like, you can't stop people from butt fucking, whatever.
Or the way John Ritter will say, I was passing by the plus size department and I heard something about you're not going to defecate right for a week.
I think he said shit right.
He says
you're not going to shit right for a month is what John Ritter says, but Billy Bob Thornton I think says for a week because he repeats that.
And then later, out of the blue, he runs into Octavia Spencer, who says, last time I saw you, I did shit right for a week.
Yeah, there's
and
a callback.
I love Octavia Spencer,
Who is she?
Who is she?
Yeah.
She was in The Help. Yeah. She's in Red Band Society. That's right.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Lots of weird, like, blink and you'll miss it cameos.
Yeah.
Did you see Matt Walsh?
No.
Matt Walsh showed up.
Wait, what was he?
Yeah, he's the neighbor.
Yeah, he's the neighbor who said, could you light all the lamps?
He's not really a neighbor, though. I guess he just moved in.
He looks so young in this movie. It's weird.
He does. That's why I didn't recognize
him. He was young. Like, their series was probably just ending.
I think so, yeah.
So maybe this is his first thing after his show.
Billy Gardell was in it. It's the first security guard you see. Is now in Mike and Molly. All these, like,
Yeah. Yeah, in our version, he's not in it as much.
I don't think he has one line,
and there's like a longer, more disturbing exchange in your version.
There is a longer, more disturbing exchange.
What's the longer, more disturbing exchange?
I think they just kind of say "fuck you" to each other a couple of times. There's lots of there's lots of moments like that where they'll just pause the action and let, like, you know, Bernie Mac and Tony Cox, you know, yell horrible things at each other. And to me, it works.
Yeah.
Bernie Mac's best moment is the negotiation scene where Marcus is slowly trying to get him
45, half.
Every time he says half, it just gets better and better.
So funny.
There are just, there's just a bunch of those great comic exchanges. But it all, really, most of the movie, most of the laughs of the movie just come down to swearing in front of children. I don't know what's so funny about that.
I didn't laugh at that.
No?
No.
For some reason, I find...
Your ovaries were like...
I was horrified. I mean, I don't think it was bad. I'm kidding. Like, I wasn't offended or anything, but it didn't actually make me laugh. I was just kind of like, I was cracking up.
Like, what? How could... Like,
earmuffs,
how could you be that?
Earmuffs.
Yeah. And weirdly enough, like, all the terrible shit Billy Bob Thornton does, all the things... all the people he steals from... The worst thing he does, the moment where you're like, okay, I can't be with you anymore, is the moment where he eats the kids' candy in the advent calendar. I'm like, okay, that was a step too far. I can't believe you did that.
Well, he was drunk.
Still.
He taped it back up.
Still, you know how much that calendar meant to that kid.
He should have just bought him another calendar.
He was like...
It was the way he dealt with it afterwards, but I can't really fault him for eating it. Advent calendars are so good. Okay, you have one, and you're like, but I want the rest.
But the kid wanted to save it for Christmas.
I thought you didn't have advent calendars.
I can buy them from Trader Joe's. I don't care.
Can't you just buy...
I've never had one.
Can't you just buy a box of chocolates?
It's more fun when it's an advent calendar. Okay.
Because then it feels... Because
then
naughty.
You learn the story of Jesus.
I don't even remember the story of Jesus. I just remember the chocolates were good.
I remember it.
I was not paying attention. No. Okay, I'm Jewish. I don't need to. Okay.
I don't even know what happened.
I don't even care. Okay. It's after my time.
This was screened at Cannes for some reason. In 2004.
It's an excellent piece of filmmaking.
Yes.
How about that?
It's just a highly artistic film.
I don't know. There's something artistic about it.
Well, I want to watch the director's cut, actually, because it sounded like... Basically, what happened was they tested it, and they were like, audience don't know if they are supposed to think this is funny. And then Terry Zwiger, whatever, was like, yeah, that's what I wanted. And then they were like, well, it can't be like that. And that's why they added that voiceover in the beginning, so that they'd be like, oh, okay, you're supposed to be laughing at this guy.
I could actually kind of tell, like, if they hadn't had the wacky, if they hadn't had, you know, kind of the ironically wacky Christmas music, and they just played it a little bit more straight, it would have just been kind of a dramatic character study of this really terrible guy doing horrible things.
Yeah.
That's part of the charm of it.
So I wonder, because, you know, sometimes they re-edit after festivals. I have no idea which version they showed. I'm sure they showed the theatrical.
Cannes just loves the Coen brothers for some reason, and maybe just any project they're involved with, they'll do it.
Oh yeah, I mean, they do.
Well, that could be it. Yeah.
Nick Reffin.
I don't know.
Too.
I still
that too.
Anybody?
Only God forgives. You're in.
Yeah. Nah. I don't know. I even though it is like a studio movie, I still thought it was unusual because of the character developed. It was unusual enough to me that it was like, that's pretty well crafted, actually.
But this time the Weinsteins were... I mean, they're still... Right. Was it a studio movie, or it was a Weinsteins movie?
It was kind of... Yeah. It was So it was kind of like... I don't know. It was a 10... I mean, at that point, even in 2003, a Weinstein movie is enough to get like a big release.
Big, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting. I feel like this was probably more shocking in 2003 than it is now. Now it almost feels like it could be more of a piece that with modern... comedies.
Sure, with like all the like Judd Apatow,
right.
And
yeah.
Like what, I mean, it would just be like, whatever, okay, right. Bad Santa, that's true.
This came out the same year Dodgeball and Anchorman came out.
Those are different.
They're very, very different films, but all those together, it almost did kind of feel like a sea change in American
comedy. Oh, yeah. Oh,
like, maybe, that was kind of like the start of a new era in comic filmmaking.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I think Bad Santa is an underrated part of that, because I do feel like there have been a lot of films that have taken after at least that kind of arc or that kind of story.
Yeah, I was into it.
Yeah, it's totally fits much better with today's comedy landscape of stuff.
Two people who were originally up for the role of Bad Santa and showed a lot of interest in playing it were Jack Nicholson and Bill Murray.
No.
Word.
And I can't see either of those.
No, absolutely not.
Maybe Jack. I don't know.
No,
maybe
I feel the other way.
Though.
I feel the other way.
I just feel like Bill is too inherently like charming to do it. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
He would have been a little too, not like wholesome, but something, too lovable about him, I think.
He definitely...
The way he would play somebody bad.
Exactly. Like, he wouldn't seem bad enough. It would be like...
Yeah. Billy Bob Thornton's like, I'm a piece of shit.
Right.
The end.
He owns that character for sure.
Totally. And I think Jack Nicholson would be very, like, too arrogant or something for the role, too, in my opinion. Just like...
I think maybe if you'd gone in a more dramatic direction and just let him be full piece of shit who never has any redemption, maybe Jack Nicholson could have done it.
Nah, I don't know. I just can't see him in it. He would annoy me more.
But really, this just seems like it plays to Billy Bob's acting style so well. I can't imagine anybody else.
No.
You could in one shot of the movie, I think they're in the hot tub and the kid is reading How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And you could actually see that as kind of an analog to what's going on here.
Oh.
Even if...
Was that in a version we didn't see?
You didn't see what? That? No. I mean, it's kind of a blink and you'll miss it thing.
To me, it kind of seemed like a
winking thing, like, this is a little bit what's going on here. Maybe Willie's heart doesn't grow 3 sizes, but at least maybe grows 1/2 a size by the end of the movie.
Yeah, if that. Yeah.
And that's what makes it work. There's just a little bit of redemption, and that's what makes it sweet.
That's true. Yeah.
And the promise even of a bad Santa 2. And I'll leave you guys by saying there is, in fact, a bad Santa 2 in the works. It's been been in the works for a couple of years. But
Interesting.
And they technically left it open for a sequel. They could do it.
Yeah.
The happy family sort of. In the house.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. It'd be like Beethoven 2.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the dog is with the family
and now.
And
now the kid's all grown up. Finally that kid has something to do.
That kid was so good, though.
The problem is the kid would be corrupted by that guy. And
Imagine if he'd lived with him for 10 years.
Yeah.
Well, so. I don't think it'll be 10 years, though. They're going to make it just a few years.
But
He'll make him play like a 14-year-old, I think.
Do you think he could play a 14-year-old?
Yeah. A lot of people
on that picture?
Look, he'll grow his hair out to be all curly, look like a dork.
Right.
I think it could be done.
I guess so.
Because 14-year-olds are the size of adults.
Sometimes.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Sometimes. This is my opinion. All right? He's going to be 14, guys. All right?
Okay. All right. Okay.
Obviously, it's your opinion because it's wrong.
Wow. We'll see. We'll see when Bad Santa 2 comes out and we add to the podcast. How dare you? Don't use my own podcast. Don't use my voice against me. And by the way, we're supposed to add How Dare You.
I know. I remember I listened to that today and it was like, let's add it. Do you want to just do it now?
Dare you.
Everybody be quiet.
How dare you?
I like that. That was a good read.
Because it was a real one.
Because it was real. Because you meant it. I can tell. That's why I wanted to capture it while you're still in the moment.
There it is, folks.
Let's move on to our final segment, which is called Raising Arizona. Which is where we have a quiz with a theme loosely inspired by the movie. And this time I didn't go too far out on a limb, guys. The theme of this week's quiz is Santa Claus.
So expected, though.
Sometimes they go for the expected. Sometimes it's just like a movie just says, do a quiz about this. So why not? Here's how this works. Each question has 3 possible answers, and you guys will just pick between the answers.
Okay.
Whoever has the most points at the end wins.
Oh.
Yeah, when you know it, just say
I didn't know it was a contest.
Oh, yeah. It's a quiz.
Oh, yeah. You and Jackie are competing against each other.
I knew that. I knew it. I'm ready.
Well, let's see if you know this. Santa Claus.
He has an advantage, by the way, because I'm Jewish.
So Santa Claus is fair. I mean, Santa Claus is basically like an American figure.
I'm just telling you.
They don't even have Santa Claus in other countries.
I also converted to paganism, so.
Really?
No.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I was prepared to believe that.
Yeah, yeah. Come out to my equinox. We're going to jump over a fire.
Ooh, there's like an eclipse tomorrow. Anyway.
It was today.
Ooh.
Oh, today?
I think it was today.
23rd, right?
Maybe it's right now.
No, it happened at 3 o'clock.
That's it.
Aw, man.
Oh, I was going to say that would be a good omen for the podcast. It was,
because we entered it after the eclipse. Whatever.
Sure.
Bloody Birthday. Are you in that movie?
No.
It's great. Anyway, go ahead.
We'll allow you to do this quiz.
Bloody Birthday. Question 1. Santa Claus is based on Saint Nicholas, a real person who lived in Turkey around the year 270. He's considered the patron saint of children. One story about Saint Nick is that he once came across a butcher selling a barrel which had the label ham on it, but when he looked inside, he saw the remains of 3 children. What did Saint Nick do, according to legend? A. He resurrected the children. B. He turned the butcher into a pig. C. He ate the butcher alive.
B.
I'm going to go with A.
Zane gets a point. It was so obvious. Sometimes it is.
It was so obvious. Yeah,
he decided to bring the kids back to life.
He's a saint.
Yeah, he's a saint.
He's not going to eat the guy.
He's not going to turn people into a pig. That would be mean.
See, I'm Jewish, so I don't know what saints do. That's going to be my... Every time I get something wrong.
But you know saints are supposed to be, like, nice, right?
I guess. Okay, fine. Good logic.
Yeah.
Fine.
I mean, no words on whether when he brought the kids back to life, he'd, like, repaired them or stitched them back up or something. It would be terrible to be brought back to life in pieces. Question number two. What year was the name Santa Claus first used to describe St. Nicholas? A, 1773. B, 1850. C, 1909.
May 1st?
Oh, I'm just thinking.
I think... C.
1909. I'm just trying to read Josh, see if he has any tells. He has really good tells. Look at that. That's a good stone face. Very impressive.
There were 17 aces.
I'm going to say 1909 also. Wow, that was not me doing
that. That was a hurry up noise. No. You guys are both saying 1909. You guys are both wrong.
It was 1850?
It was 1773.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. I would have gone that anyway.
Yeah, the name... The name Santa Claus, it is an Anglophone bastardization of the German Sinterklaas, and it first showed up in print in a New York City newspaper in 1773.
What is Sinterklaas?
Sinterklaas is the German Santa Claus.
Oh. It's got big claws.
What does Sinter mean? What does Klaus mean? It's just a name.
Claus.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of their own version of St. Nicholas. And he also, like...
Klaus isn't Nick.
And I think in the Netherlands, he also has a buddy named Zwarte Piet, which means Black Pete, and it's usually played by a white guy in blackface, even now.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah. They got, like, weird semi-racist traditions in other countries.
The word of not being racist hasn't spread that far north yet.
Yep.
Go to northern Canada.
Really?
It's all blackface.
Really?
Really?
No, I don't know.
Do you like how much you and I are both like everything he says?
I know.
Like,
you're really good at it.
I say everything pretty straight.
For some reason,
I have a dry
For some
delivery.
Reason, you just strike me a guy who's just like very worldly and traveled. So I think, hey, maybe he's been to Northern Canada and knows shit about
it. Yeah, maybe he really is a pagan. Like, I don't know.
Right.
Maybe he is.
Maybe they just have like all blackface towns up in the UK.
Wait, do you act also?
No.
No, you should.
Why, thank you. Just cast me and pay me and I'll be on my way.
Sounds good.
You could be bad judge.
Bad judge.
Now, it's got a whole different spin when it's like a guy. It's like a Walker Texas Ranger. I mean, Chuck Norris is a bad judge. Question number three. Zane has 1 point so far. 2 points. One point. Jackie has zero.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you don't have to say it like that.
I do.
Question number three. Why does Santa dress in a red suit? A, to match the nose of his lead reindeer, Rudolph. B, because Coca-Cola cans are red. C, red symbolizes the blood of Christ.
C.
To match the nose of his lead reindeer, Rudolph.
I can't win at this quiz. I'm going to say A.
It might be B.
Because Coca-Cola cans are red, red symbolizes the blood of Christ. C and A?
Yeah.
I think so.
You're both wrong.
I kind of thought it was B.
In 1930... Santa Claus used to dress in all different colors. He used to be like blue or green or whatever. But in 1931, Coca-Cola released an ad with Santa Claus in a red suit. Before that, he was depicted as wearing suits of many colors, but the Coke red one stuck.
In which year? 1909?
1931.
Oh.
1931.
Yep.
That's so annoying.
Coca-Cola.
So every time you see Santa Claus, you're basically looking at a Coke ad.
That's annoying.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Question number four. Until 1900, instead of Santa Claus, most Scandinavian countries had Julupukki, the Yule goat, a goat who goes from family to family every Christmas season to make sure they're celebrating the holidays properly. Which of these is a true fact about the Yule goat? A.
Julupukki.
Instead of giving gifts to children, he demanded gifts from them. B. His assistants were cats instead of elves. C. He flew from town to town on a bearskin carpet instead of a sleigh.
A.
I think it's... Wait, what was A?
Instead of giving gifts to children, it's demanded gifts from them.
Oh, I think it's C.
Jackie gets a point.
Oh, yeah. One and one.
I knew it.
one.
There's
one.
Something about that, like, Soviet and Northern, like, weirdness. That's okay, like, that you're... You give me gift.
You right. give
like,
me gift.
Yeah. In Soviet North, you right. give me gift.
Better make sure you have some change for the Yule goat.
Yeah.
Or else your family will get years of bad luck.
Yeah. And
coal was a really awesome gift that you wanted.
Yeah.
And Northern Soviet Union.
And also, his assistants were not cats, but they were dwarves.
There's a goat and its assistants were dwarves. Seems like
goats have a bunch of dwarves.
The dwarves would have the goat as an assistant.
I know.
No, the goat's in charge.
Oh, what did the goat say? I don't know. Just go get the gifts.
Just get some trash. Feed it to it.
Yeah.
Give it another can.
True or false, suicide rates are highest during Christmas.
True.
Highest in comparison to what?
The rest
other
of the
times
year.
Of the year.
True.
You're both wrong.
What?
It is a long-standing rumor that suicide rates are highest during Christmas, but it's not actually true. Suicide rates are highest during the spring.
What?
Mm-hmm. Which kind of matches the idea, which I've heard some, you know, like, and some psychology articles that, like, people are most likely to kill themselves when they're coming out of a depression.
Oh.
So maybe, like, as it seems like summer's just around the corner, that's when it peaks for people.
Wow.
What? Yeah. What makes somebody say, oh, I'm feeling a lot better today. I should blow my brains out before it comes back.
Because it's like when you're at the like the bottom of a depression, then you feel like no energy to do anything, include kill yourself. But as you're coming out of that, suddenly
so
you feel
like a solution.
Like yeah, like finally I've got it. This
you
is
have
the solution.
Like action
right.
to take. When,
right.
when you're really depressed, you can't take action. But when you're getting that
exactly.
makes sense. Actually, when
exactly.
you're getting better from depression, you're like, nah, I'll just kill myself.
Right.
Got
exactly.
It.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There's a great scene in this movie where he's trying to kill himself.
Yeah.
No.
I know.
The kid.
And then the kid, no. yeah. And then he turns the corner because of that kid. The power of love, guys. Question number 6. Which of these is not the name of one of Santa's reindeer? I hope you guys remember it all.
Oh, no.
A, Vixen. B, Cupid. C, Dunder.
Dunder.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Yeah, see.
Yeah, you guys are both right.
Yeah, you know why? Because you worked too hard at that. Like, are you sure?
But part of the reason I use that is because Donner and Blitzen used to be Dunder and Blixen before they were changed to something more Americanized.
Blixen.
Well, I never heard of those ones.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have known that.
But yeah, Dunder at one point was a reindeer, but not a reindeer anymore, so you guys are both right.
Uh-huh.
Still tied, guys.
Tied.
All right.
Four more questions left. Question number 7. If Santa Claus planned to deliver a 2-pound toy to every Christian household in the world in one night, how much would his bag of presents weigh?
Every Christian household.
Yes.
Two pounds.
A, 40,000 tons.
Don't do it in tons.
It's in tons. All of them are in tons.
Don't do it in tons.
How many pounds are in a ton? 2,000?
2,000.
Guys, I'm not a mathematician. Okay.
No, it's just funny that you're like, don't do it in tons, but then you're like, how many pounds are in a ton? That's going
to
really help you figure it out.
I wrote it in tons. Do you want me to do some quick mental math now? I can do that for you if you want. Okay.
I have no idea how many Christian households there
okay.
are.
Okay.
That's where you're going to lose.
Okay.
But me too.
A, 80,000 pounds. B, 80 million pounds.
No, do the tons.
Okay, 40,000 tons, 180,000 tons, 350,000 tons.
40,000 tons,
180,000
tons,
350,000 tons. If Santa Claus delivered a 2-pound toy to every Christian household in the world.
What are the numbers again?
40,000 tons, 180,000 tons, 350,000 tons.
So it doesn't really matter that it's a... Oh, this is how much all the toys would weigh.
This is how much all the toys would weigh.
So the two cancels out the tons, so it's really just that many pounds of 1-pound toys.
You can think of it like that.
That's how I did it, too.
Sure. Okay, so yes. Okay. 40 million 1-pound toys.
40 million.
180 million 1-pound toys. 350 million 1-pound toys.
How many I'll tell you how many Scientologists there are.
How many?
25,000 today. There's only 25,000 Scientologists today.
I think
Rastafarians?
I think I knew that actually, but I can't tell you how I know.
Oh, yeah. Rastafarians, there's 50,000. I imagine there are more Christians than Rastafarians.
I think so too.
Therefore. Okay, so like.
See?
The world is in total 7 billion people. right?
Yep, give or take.
Yeah.
And among those people, 6 billion of them are Christians.
Nah.
I'm just kidding. Are we counting Catholics as Christians?
Yes.
whoa, that's a Southern Baptist stuff.
Pentecost, Mormons. Okay.
Oh, Jews for Jesus, we're counting them.
Jews for Jesus?
Wow, if you believe they're not Jesus. They're not Christian,
if you
they're
believe
Jews.
If you believe in Jesus, I count.
If you believe that Christ has returned already.
Yeah. I'm just saying, they call themselves Jews. They probably don't celebrate Christmas. Or do they? 40? I'm still saying C. I want to be done with this question.
I'm just going to guess, I guess, because it's... What's 40 million, 180 million, 350 million. Million. I have to say... It has to be... I have to believe that there are at least... Oh, Christian household. I have to say there's at least 350 million people who claim they're Christians in the world.
You guys are both saying C?
And so you multiply that by family units, so... That'd be like four times that. I would say still that's probably true.
You guys are right.
Oh,
yeah.
All that there. Math, all we had to do was just say the most.
You could have just said the most.
Yeah.
And also...
Good job. Good job. No, it is. I'm just saying.
Also, just by the way, because Santa would have to travel at 650 miles per second to deliver all the gifts in one night, he would encounter over 17,000 G-forces on his trip. Which is slightly above the lethal limit.
Slightly above the lethal limit.
Question number 8. Forbes magazine annually publishes the Forbes Fictional 15, the list of the 15 wealthiest fictional characters. For many years,
Wait, they do that.
That's a real thing. For many years, Santa Claus topped the list with an estimated infinite dollars until he was removed from contention in 2006 because they decided that was unfair. But who topped that list in 2013? Who was the top of the Forbes Fictional 15 in 2013? A, Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
B, Scrooge McDuck.
Mm-hmm.
C, Smaug the dragon from the Lord of the Rings movies.
Hobbit, yeah. I'd say Smaug has more than Scrooge McDuck. And Tony Stark has more... I mean, do we translate the gold currencies into 2014 dollars?
Everything's in 2014 dollars.
Okay.
So whatever the equivalent of Middle Earth gold is in 2014 dollars.
Oh, that's tough. I think it's Smaug.
Hmm.
Well.
I don't know. I'm not really clear on his richness.
Stark
level.
Industries.
Stark.
I'll just say Smaug just for fun.
Stark?
I think it's Stark.
You're both wrong.
Oh, that's impossible.
According to Forbes magazine, Scrooge is worth an estimated $65
billion. I want the conversion. I don't believe it.
I want the ledgers. I want the ledgers on his bank account.
I am auditing their review, right?
Compared to Smaug's $54 billion and Tony's $12
billion. $54 billion? Wait, how do they get that number?
I don't know.
They're like, that seems like a pretty big cave full of gold.
$65 billion.
Really?
I mean, he's got that whole room full of gold coins. That's no joke.
$65 billion? Is there someone in the world who has $65 billion in real life?
No, he would be the richest person in real life.
Who's the richest person in real life?
I think it's Carlos Slim.
Yeah, some Mexican guy.
Yeah, right? Like the Mexican telecommunications guy.
How much?
I think it's, I want to say like 40-something billion.
Holy crap.
More than Smaug. Wow. More than a fictional character.
Rounding out that top five, by the way, were Carlisle Cullen, Edward Cullen's father from the Twilight series. And Charles Foster Kane, aka Citizen Kane.
Huh.
Which
interesting.
Solid list.
Citizen Kane.
I would have thought Tony Stark. I would have thought Tony Stark would have had more money too.
Yeah.
Question number 9. Are Santa's reindeer male or female?
Male. No. Female. Sorry.
They're male. They're reindeer balls.
Jackie's right. Because
did I say female?
You said female, you're right. Because
they don't have huge antlers.
Yeah. If they were male, they would have shed their antlers for the winter. But they always have antlers when they ever see them depicted.
Holy.
Yeah. So you never would have thought about that, but it's true. They have to be female.
So
of course, they're also
Rudolph
magic reindeer.
Is a girl?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I think I'm not like a Christian child because I feel super lied to.
Do you think that
you know
Rudolph
what it's not-
is in the Bible? It's not, honey.
You know what? Jackie, it's not about what gender you were born. It's about what gender you feel life. Like, Rudolph can be whatever gender he wants
That's
to.
That's true. She wants to.
She wants to. No, he identifies as a male, obviously.
Are you sure?
That's obviously his gender identity. If his
How do you know that?
If his name is Rudolph.
But he was born.
Some girls have boy names. That doesn't mean they identify as
but
males.
But not Rudolph.
How do you know?
Is there any girl named Rudolph?
I don't know.
Yeah. Maya Rudolph.
Touché.
Boom!
Man.
Yeah, order, order.
We have one question left and you guys are tied. We can't leave it on a tie, guys. So,
so good.
All right, guys. Question number 10, last question. Which of these 90s films grossed the most? The Santa Claus?
Mm-hmm.
Jingle All the Way?
Mm-hmm.
The Nightmare Before Christmas?
Jingle All the Way.
Was Jingle All the Way with Tim Allen?
No, it was not. It was with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Was Santa Claus with Tim Allen?
Yes.
The Santa Claus.
I don't know.
Zane takes the quiz.
Yeah.
Santa Claus. Was the
I didn't get a chance to change my answer, though, which I was going to do after he said Tim Allen.
Well, sorry. I wasn't going to let you change it to Tim Allen. That would have been
You cut me off.
Yeah, but we have
We were about to tie.
I know, but I don't want to have a tie.
Don't be a sore loser, man.
I'm going to be, though.
But you should have...
How dare you?
That was your first answer. Yeah, I don't want to do another tie.
Remember when I said, that the reindeer were male? No, female.
Yeah, but you changed it like right away.
Yeah, but I...
I feel like as soon as both of you guys have registered an answer, it's fair game to end it.
How dare you? No.
Would you have changed it to Santa Claus?
Congratulations, Jane. I would have.
Thank you very much.
I'll allow it.
I have a quiz question.
Sure.
What... It's not a quiz question.
I love when our guests have questions.
Yeah.
What is your favorite, since it is near Halloween, what's your favorite Christmas horror movie?
Favorite Christmas horror movie?
You don't like those?
No.
How many Christmas, I mean.
There's a lot.
Are there a lot beyond like The Nightmare Before Christmas?
Oh no, there's like real, Black Christmas I think is the greatest slasher movie of all time.
Black Christmas,
I don't watch stuff like
one
that
One of the
though.
Best ones. There's Silent Night, Deadly Night, 1, 2, 3, and I think 4.
I don't think I've ever seen a straight up Christmas horror movie. Oh, I know that there are movies like Silent Night, Deadly Night, and Black Christmas. But...
And there's one more. I can't remember.
Not my genre. I don't know.
Okay, sorry.
But you've
That's okay.
But you've seen The Nightmare Before Christmas.
I've seen it. I saw it.
Will you admit that movie's probably better than Silent Night, Deadly
Night?
No,
absolutely.
You won't?
Well, Silent Night, Deadly Night 1, yes. Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, no. Black Christmas, definitely not. That movie is a masterpiece of horror.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to watch that.
It was genre-defining. The guy who wrote it and directed it actually went on to have like a pretty diverse career and success. But that movie is terrifying.
Oh
no, I'm
really
not watching it.
Yeah,
that sounds like your perfect movie, Jackie.
No
Christmas horror, it's all coming together.
No.
Your favorite
thing. I watch it every Christmas they show it. Well, they did at CineFamily. I don't know what they'll do now that Quentin has changed everything over. I hope he still shows it.
Yeah,
I think it was a 30.
Zane, if people want to find you and your stuff online, where can they find you?
They can find me at Zane Grant on Twitter. You can follow me there. You can also check out Mystic Party on iTunes.
Check out Mystic Party if you haven't checked it out. It's a cool podcast.
Yes, we're on the Super Creative Network. I also have another show that's a scripted sketch news show called You're Welcome World News.
Sweet.
And it's like an NPR parody. But Mystic Party is myself and my sister, Bria Grant. And it's a paranormal advice show. It is comedic.
It's very supernatural.
Though sometimes people have asked us, so you believe you're a psychic and you believe in aliens and they think it's real.
Well, Zane, if you've ever listened to a real psychic or supernatural show, it's already so close to parody. I feel like somebody who's bad at those shows wouldn't necessarily tell
the difference. Yeah. It's true. That's probably it.
Yeah. Well, you know why? Because you're so convincing. Like even the few things you've said today that Josh and I'm like, oh, really?
As if I really believe them.
So I think there's something about your delivery that really makes people buy into it.
Interesting.
So, which is great. That's like very successful.
You know, my success in Hollywood, I attribute it all to hypnotism.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I want to talk to your hypnotist.
Oh,
I want a consultation.
No problem.
Cool.
Hook you up.
Jackie? Where can people find you? Have you tweeted anything?
Yeah,
funny?
No. I mean, because I've been underwater, under the water of the water,
Atlantis.
Of the ocean.
Under the.
I've been under Atlantis recently.
Well, you definitely don't get reception down there.
Exactly. So I have not been able to tweet. But no, I realized today I haven't even tweeted our last few episodes, which is terrible.
Oh,
it's okay. I've been tweeting.
I know.
You can always retweet me.
I forgot to do that.
That only takes a click.
I know, but I've forgotten to do that, for a few episodes, so I've been out of control.
You can't tell, but I'm shaking my head.
I know. Well, I'm back on the wagon today, because I retweeted yesterday, the episode came out yesterday.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I didn't retweet it. Okay, I posted about it, my own original tweet.
I saw it. I totally noticed you did that.
Thank you. Thanks for favoriting it, not because you didn't.
I didn't.
You
know what?
I tweeted something
just,
else.
Just saying
so,
that, you know
I'm
what?
On it.
I'm not only favoriting you, I'm retweeting you.
Thank you.
Both.
That's what co-hosts do for
a double.
Each other. Thank you.
Awesome.
So, yeah, MacLean, MacQueline. You guys know the drill.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Radio TFB, and you can check me out at joshrichmond.net, and acceptthemystery.net is where you can find all sorts of info related to this show. You might have also noticed I showed up on an episode of AfterBuzz TV's Bar Rescue a couple of days ago. The Bar Rescue after show, where I talked about the TV show Bar Rescue and my issues with that show. It was awesome. Pretty entertaining. If you want to find it, it's on my Twitter feed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
So yeah, I'm making appearances in surprising places, guys.
Yeah, also Buzz Music. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
but
Tom
what?
York,
like what?
Like that Tom York. Like remember his?
Oh yeah.
And then it was an
image
of you on Buzz Music.
I showed up on a BuzzFeed article for some reason.
Yeah.
They were saying the internet's craziest reactions to Tom York talking about releasing an album on BitTorrent, and the picture they used is a picture from my Facebook feed of me going like this.
Yeah, basically Home Alone, almost.
The Home Alone face.
Yeah.
Which I sometimes make in photos. That's one of my go-to funny faces.
Yeah, that's great. I'm so proud of you.
Which I kind of felt like this movie was Home Alone rated R.
Yeah.
But that's a whole nother show.
Except if Macaulay Culkin, lived with his kidnappers and made fun of him.
Who was the Macaulay Culkin of this film? That's what I often ask.
It's not the kid?
No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Okay, guys. Let's wrap things up. Guys, thank you so much for listening to this. Next week, we're going to be talking about a film called The Lady Killers.
Oh.
Diving back into the official Coen Brothers canon. Although this was a fun detour off of it. Don't say ugh.
I'm going to.
You don't know. You might love it.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I kind of know you're not going to, but you might.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Anyways, guys, until next time, peace and love.
Peace and love.